But not every night. I realized, but I was carrying two cargoes. Yes, one of them was horror, but the other one was hope. I realized I had killed myself back to life. I read your novels. I read the newspapers you sent. In the opinion columns, I underlined the grand sentences, and I looked up every word in my Collins gem. I practiced for hours in front of the mirror until I could make the big words look natural in my mouth. I read a lot about your royal family. I like your queen more than I like her English. Do you know how you would kill yourself during a garden party with Queen Elizabeth II on the great lawn of Buckingham Palace in London, just in case you were invited? I do. Me? I would kill myself with a broken champagne glass, or maybe a sharp lobster claw, or even a small piece of cucumber that I could suck down into my windpipe if the men suddenly came. I often wonder what the Queen would do if the men suddenly came. You cannot tell me she does not think about it a lot. When I read Life in the United Kingdom, about some of the things that have happened to the women in the Queen's job, I understood that she must think about it all of the time. I think that if the Queen and I met, then we would have many things in common. The Queen smiles sometimes, but if you look at her eyes in her portrait on the back of the 5-pound note, you will see she is carrying a heavy cargo too. The Queen and me, we are ready for the worst. In public you will see both of us smiling, and sometimes even laughing. But if you were a man who looked at us in a certain way, we would both of us make sure we were dead before you could lay a single finger on our bodies. Me and the Queen of England, we would not give you the satisfaction. It is good to live like this. Once you are ready to die, you do not suffer so badly from the horror. So I was nervous, but I was smiling, because I was ready to die. That morning they let us girls out of detention. I will tell you what happened when the taxi driver came. The four of us girls, we were waiting outside the immigration detention center. We were keeping our backs to it, because this is what you do to a big grey monster who has kept you in his belly for 2 years, when he suddenly spits you out. You keep your back to him and talk in whispers, in case he remembers you and the clever idea comes into his mind to swallow you all up again. I looked across to Yvette, the tall pretty girl from Jamaica. Every time I looked at her before, she was laughing and smiling. But now her smile looked as nervous as mine. "What is wrong?" I whispered. Yvette moved her mouth close to my ear. "It ain't safe out here."
"But they have released us, haven't they? We are free to go. What is the problem?"
Yvette shook her head and whispered again. "Ain't that simple, darling? 'Tis freedom as in you girls is free to go. And then there's freedom as in you girls is free to go till we catches you. Sorry, but it's that second kind of freedom we got right now, Lil B. Truth. They call it being an illegal immigrant."
"I don't understand, Yvette."
"Yeah, and I can't explain it to you here." Yvette looked across at the two girls and behind her at the detention center. When she turned back to me, she leaned close into my ear again. "I played a trick to get us let out of there."
"What sort of trick?"
"Shh, darling. There is too many listeners in this place, B. Trust me, we got to find some place we can hide up. Then I can explain the situation to you at leisure." Now the two other girls were staring at us. I smiled at them, and I tried not to think about what Yvette said. We were sitting on our heels at the main gate of the detention center. The fences stretched away from us on both sides. The fences were as high as four men, and they had razor wire on the tops in nasty black rolls. I looked at the other three girls and I started giggling. Yvette stood up and she put her hands on her hips and made big eyes at me.
"Why the hell you laughing, little bug?"
"My name is Little B, Yvette, and I am laughing because of this fence."
Yvette looked up at it.
"My God, darling, you Nigerians is worse than you look. You think this fence is funny? Me hope me never see the fence you consider to be serious."
"It is the razor wire, Yvette. I mean, look at us girls. Me with my underwear in a see-through plastic bag, and you in your flip-flops, and this girl in her nice yellow sari, and this one with her documents. Do we look like we could climb that fence? I am telling you, girls, they could take away that razor wire, and they could put pound coins and fresh mangoes on the top of the fence, and we still could not climb out."
Now Yvette started to laugh.
"Woo ha 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 ha!"
And she scolded me with her finger.
"You foolish girl! You think they built this fence for to keep us girls in? You crazy! They built this fence for to keep all the boys out. Them boys know the quality of the humans they keep lock up in this place. They be breaking down the doors."
I was laughing, but then the girl with the documents spoke. She was sitting on her heels and looking down at her Dunlop green flash trainers.
"Where are all of us going to go?"
"Wherever the taxi take us, you're not see it? And then we take it on from there. Brighten up that gloomy face, darling. We going there, in England."
Yvette pointed her finger out through the open gate. The girl with the documents looked up at where she was pointing, and so did the sorry girl, and so did I. It was a bright morning. I told you this already. It was the month of May, and there was warm sunshine dripping through the holes between the clouds, like the sky was a broken blue bowl, and a child was trying to keep honey in it. We were at the top of the hill. There was a long tarmac road winding from our gate all the way to the horizon. There was no traffic on it. At our end, the road finished where we sat. It did not go anywhere else. On both sides of the road there were fields, and these were beautiful fields, with bright green grass so fresh it made you hungry. I looked at those fields, and I thought I could get down on my hands and knees and put my face into that grass and eat and eat and eat. And that is what a very great number of cows were doing to the left of the road, and an even greater number of sheep to the right. In the nearest field, a white man in a small blue tractor was pulling some implement across the ground, but do not ask me what was its function. Another white man in blue clothes that I think you call overalls, he was tying a gate closed with bright orange rope. The fields were very neat and square, and the hedgerows between them were straight and low.
"It is big," said the girl with the documents. "Nah, it ain't nothing," said Yvette. "We just got to get to London. Me know people there."
"I do not know people," said the girl with the documents. "I do not know anyone."
"Well, you just gonna do your best, darling."
The girl with the documents frowned.
"How come there was no one here to help us? How come my caseworker she not here to fetch me? How come they give us no release papers?"
Yvette shook her head.
"Ain't you got enough papers in that bag of yours already, darling? Some people, you give em the inch, they want the whole mile."
Yvette laughed, but her eyes looked desperate.
"Now where is that damn taxi?" she said.
"The man on the phone said 10 minutes."
"Feel like 10 years already, truth."
Yvette fell quiet. We looked out over the countryside again. The landscape was deep and wide. A breeze blew across it. We sat there on our heels, and we watched the cows and the sheep and the white man tying the gates closed around them. After some time, our taxi came into sight. We watched it from the moment it was a small white speck at the distant end of the road. Yvette turned to me and she smiled.
"This taxi driver, he sound cute on the phone."
I did not talk to the driver. I only talked to the taxi controller.
18 months I gone without a man, Bog. This taxi driver better be a real Mr. Minchin. You know what I'm saying? Me like him tall, with a bit of fat on him. Me no like no skinny boys. And me like him dress fine. Got no time for losers, ain't that right?
I shrugged. I watched the taxi getting nearer. Yvette looked at me.
What sort of man you like, lil' bug?
I looked at the ground. There was grass there, pushing out of the tarmac, and I twisted it in my hands. When I thought about men, I felt a fear in my belly so sharp it was like knives piercing me. I did not want to speak, but Yvette nudged me with her elbow.
Come on, bug. What sort of boy be madam's type?
Oh, you know, the usual sort.
What? What you mean? The usual sort. Tall, short, skinny, fat?
I looked down at my hands. I think my ideal man would speak many languages. He would speak Igbo and Yoruba and English and French and all of the others. He would speak with any person, even the soldiers, and if there was violence in their heart, he could change it. He would not have to fight, do you see? Maybe he would not be very handsome, but he would be beautiful when he spoke. He would be very kind, even if you burned his food because you were laughing and talking with your girlfriends instead of watching the cooking. He would just say, "Ah, never mind." Yvette looked at me.
Forgive me, bug, but your ideal man, he don't sound very realistic.
The girl with the documents, she looked up from her Dunlop green flash trainers.
Leave her alone. Can't you see she is a virgin?
I looked at the ground. Yvette, she stared at me for a long time, and then she put her hand on the back of my neck. I ground the toe of my boot into the ground, and Yvette looked at the girl with the documents.
How you know this, darling?
The girl shrugged, and she pointed at the documents in her see-through plastic bag.
I have seen things. I know about people. So how come you so quiet, if you know so damn much?
The girl shrugged again. Yvette stared at her.
What they call you anyway, darling?
I do not tell people my name. This way it is safer. Yvette rolled her eyes.
Bet you don't give the boys your phone number neither.
The girl with the documents, she stared at Yvette. Then she spat on the ground. She was trembling.
You don't know anything, she said. If you knew one thing about this life, you would not think it was so funny.
Yvette put her hands on her hips. She shook her head slowly.
Darling, she said, life did take its gifts back from you and me in the different order, that's all. Truth to tell, funny is all me got left with. And you, darling, all you got left is paperwork.
They stopped then, because the taxi was pulling up. It stopped just in front of us. The side window was open, and there was music blasting out. I will tell you what that music was. It was a song called We Are the Champions by a British music band called Queen. This is why I knew the song. It is because one of the officers in the immigration detention center, he liked the band very much. He used to bring his stereo and play the music to us when we were locked in our cells. If you danced and swayed to show you liked the music, he would bring you extra food. One time he showed me a picture of the band. It was the picture from the CD box. One of the musicians in the picture, he had a lot of hair. It was black with tight curls, and it sat on the top of his head like a heavy weight, and it went right down the back of his neck to his shoulders. I understand fashion in your language, but this hair did not look like fashion. I am telling you, it looked like a punishment. One of the other detention officers came past while we were looking at the picture on the CD box, and he pointed to the musician with all that hair, and he said, "What a cock!" I remember that I was very pleased, because I was still learning to really speak your language back then, and I was just beginning to understand that one word can have two meanings. I understood this word straight away. I could see that cock referred to the musician's hair. It was like a cockerel's comb, you see. So a cock was a cockerel, and it was also a man with that kind of hair. I am telling you this because the taxi driver had exactly that kind of hair. When the taxi stopped outside the main gate of the detention center, the driver did not get out of his seat. He looked at us through the open window. He was a thin white man, and he was wearing sunglasses with dark green lenses and shiny gold frames. The girl in the yellow sari, she was amazed by the taxi car. I think she was like me, and she had never seen such a big and new and shining white car. She walked all around it and stroked her hands across its surfaces, and she said, She was still holding the empty see-through bag. She took one hand off the bag and traced the letters on the back of the car with her finger. She spoke their names very slowly and carefully, the way she had learned them in the detention center. She said, F-O-R-D. Fud. Then she got to the front of the car, and she looked at the headlights, and she blinked. She put her head on one side, and then she put it straight again, and she looked the car in the eyes and giggled. The taxi driver watched her all this time. Then he turned back to the rest of us girls, and the expression on his face was like a man who had just realized he had swallowed a hand grenade, because he thought it was a plum. "Your friend's not right in the head," he said. Yvette poked me in the stomach with her elbow. "You better do de talking, lil bug," she whispered. I looked at the taxi driver. "We are the champions," was still playing on his stereo, very loud. I realized I needed to tell the taxi driver something that showed him we were not refugees. I wanted to show that we were British and we spoke your language and understood all the subtle things about your culture. Also, I wanted to make him happy. This is why I smiled and walked up to the open window and said to the taxi driver, "Hello, I see that you are a cock." I do not think the driver understood me. The sour expression on his face became even worse. He shook his head from side to side very slowly. He said, "Don't they teach you monkeys any manners in the jungle?" And then he drove away very quickly, so that the tires of his taxi squealed like a baby when you take its milk away. The four of us girls, we stood and watched the taxi disappearing back down the hill. The cows to the left of the road and the sheep to the right of the road, they watched it too. Then they went back to eating the grass, and we girls went back to sitting on our heels. The wind blew, and the rolls of razor wire rattled on the top of the fence. The shadows of small high clouds drifted across the countryside. It was a long time before any of us spoke.
"Maybe we shoulda let Sari girl do de talking."
"I'm sorry."
"Damn Africans, you always think you so smart, but you ignorant."
I stood and walked up to the fence. I held on to the chain link and stared through it, down the hill and over the fields. Down there the two farmers were still working, the one driving the tractor and the other tying up the gates. Yvette came and stood beside me.
"What we gonna do now, Bug? No way we can stay here. Let's just walk, okay?"
I shook my head.
"What about those men down there?
You think they gonna stop us?"
I gripped on tighter to the wire.
"I don't know, Yvette. I am scared."
"What you scared of, Bug? Maybe they just leave us be. Unless you planning on calling them names too, like you done that taxi man?"
I smiled and shook my head.
"Well, all right then. Don't be afraid. Me come with you any road. Keep a check on them monkey manners you got."
Yvette turned to the girl with the documents.
"What about you, Lil Miss No Name? You coming with?"
The girl looked back at the detention center.
"Why they didn't give us more help? Why they didn't send our caseworkers to meet us?" "Well, 'cause they did not elect to do that, darling. So what you gonna do? You gonna go back in there, ask him for a car and a boyfriend and maybe some nice jewelry?"
The girl shook her head. Yvette smiled.
"Bless you, darling. And now for you, Sari girl, me gonna make this easy for you. You come with us, darling. If you agree, say nothing."
The girl with the sari blinked at her and tilted her head to one side.
"Good. We all in, Lil Bug. We all walking out of this place."
Yvette turned toward me, but I was still watching the girl. The wind blew at her yellow sari, and I saw there was a scar across her throat, right across it, thick like your little finger. It was white as a bone against her dark skin. It was knotted and curled around her windpipe, like it did not want to let go, like it thought it still had a chance of finishing her off. She saw me looking, and she hid the scar with her hand, so I looked at her hand. There were scars on that too. We have our agreement about scars, I know, but this time I looked away, because sometimes you can see too much beauty. We walked through the gates and down the tarmac road to the bottom of the hill. Yvette went first, and I was second, and the other two went behind me. I looked down at Yvette's heels all the way. I did not look left or right. My heart was pounding when we reached the bottom of the hill. The rumbling noise of the tractor grew louder until it drowned out the sound of Yvette's flip-flops. When the tractor noise grew quieter behind us, I breathed more easily again. "It is okay," I thought. "We have passed them, and of course there wasn't any trouble." How foolish I was to be scared. Then the tractor noise stopped. Somewhere nearby, a bird sang in the sudden silence.
"Wait," said a man's voice.
I whispered to Yvette, "Keep walking."
"Wait."
Yvette stopped. I tried to go past her, but she held on to my arm.
"Be serious, darling. Where you gonna run to?"
I stopped. I was so scared. I was struggling to breathe. The other girls looked the same. The girl with no name, she whispered in my ear again.
"Please, let us turn around and go back up the hill. These people do not like us, can't you see?"
The tractor man got down from his cab. The other man, the one who was tying up the gates, he came and joined the first man. They stood in the road between us and the detention center. The tractor driver was wearing a green jacket and a cap. He stood with his hands in his pockets. The man who had been tying the gates, the man in the blue overalls, he was very big. The tractor driver only came up to his chest. He was so tall that the trousers of his overalls ended higher than his socks, and he was very fat, too. There was a wide pink roll of fat under his neck, and the fat bulged out in the gaps between the bottom of his overalls and the top of his socks. He was wearing a woolen hat pulled down tight. He took a packet of tobacco out of his pocket, and he made a cigarette without taking his eyes off us girls. He had not shaved, and his nose was swollen and red. His eyes were red, too. He lit his cigarette and blew out the smoke and spat on the ground. When he spoke, his fat wobbled.
"You escaped, have you, my children?"
The tractor driver laughed.
"Don't mind small Albert," he said.
We girls looked at the ground. Me and Yvette, we were in front, and the girl with the yellow sari and the girl with no name stood behind us. The girl with no name, she whispered in my ear.
"Please, let us turn around and go. These people will not help us, can't you see?"
"They cannot hurt us. We are in England now. It is not like it was where we came from."
"Please, let's just go."
I watched her hopping from one foot to the other foot in her Dunlop green flash trainers. I did not know whether to run or to stay.
"But have you," said the tall, fat man, "escaped?"
I shook my head. "No, mister, we have been released. We are official refugees."
"You got proof of that, I suppose?"
"Our papers are held by our caseworkers," said the girl with no name. The tall, fat man looked all around us. He looked up and down the road. He stretched up to look over the hedge into the next field.
"I don't see no caseworkers," he said.
"Call them if you do not believe us," said the girl with no name. "Call the Border and Immigration Agency. Tell them to check their files. They will tell you we are legal." She looked in her plastic bag full of documents until she found the paper she wanted. "Here," she said. "The number is here. Call it, and you will see."
"No, please, don't do that," said Yvette.
The girl with no name stared at her.
"What is the problem?" she said. "They released us, didn't they?"
Yvette gripped her hands together.
"It ain't that simple," she whispered.
The girl with no name stared at Yvette. There was fury in her eyes.
"What have you done?" she said.
"What me had to do," said Yvette.
At first the girl with no name looked angry, and then she was confused, and then, slowly, I could see the terror come into her eyes. Yvette reached out her hands to her.
"Sorry, darling. I wish it weren't this way."
The girl pushed Yvette's hands away. The tractor driver took a step forward and looked at us and sighed.
"I reckon it's bloody typical, small Albert. I really do."
He looked at me with sadness, and I felt my stomach twisting.
"You ladies are in a very vulnerable situation without papers, aren't you? Certain people might take advantage of that."
The wind blew through the fields. My throat was closed so tight I could not speak. The tractor driver coughed.
"It's bloody typical of this government," he said. "I don't give a damn if you're legal or illegal. But how can they release you without papers? Left hand doesn't know what the right hand is up to. Is that everything you've got?"
I held up my see-through plastic bag, and when the other girls saw me, they held up theirs too. The tractor driver shook his head.
"Bloody typical, isn't it, Albert?"
"Wouldn't know, Mr. Ayres. This government doesn't care about anyone. You're not the first people we've seen wandering through these fields like Martians. You don't even know what planet you're on, do you? Bloody government. Doesn't care about you, refugees. Doesn't care about the countryside. Doesn't care about farmers. All this bloody government cares about is foxes and townspeople.
He looked up at the razor wire of the detention center behind us. Then he looked at each of us girls in turn.
You shouldn't even be in this situation in the first place. It's a disgrace, that's what it is, keeping girls like you locked up in a place like that. Isn't that right, Albert?
Small Albert took off his woolen hat and scratched his head, and looked up at the detention center. He blew cigarette smoke out of his nose. He did not say anything. Mr. Ayres looked at the four of us girls.
So, what are we going to do with you? You want me to go back up there with you and tell them they've got to hold on to you till your caseworkers can be contacted?
Yvette's eyes went very wide when Mr. Ayres said this.
No way, mister. Me ain't never going back in that hell place no more. Not for 1 minute. Kill me dead.
Uh-uh.
Mr. Ayres looked at me then.
I'm thinking they might have let you out by mistake, he said. Yes, that's what I'm thinking. Am I right?
I shrugged. The sorry girl and the girl with no name, they just looked at the rest of us to see what was going to happen.
Have you girls got anywhere to go? Any relatives? People expecting you somewhere?
I looked at the other girls, and then I looked back at him and shook my head no.
Is there any way you can prove that you're legal? I could be in trouble if I let you onto my land, and then it turns out I'm harboring illegal immigrants. I have a wife and 3 children. This is a serious question I'm asking you.
I am sorry, Mr. Ayres. We will not go on your land. We will just go. Mr. Ayres nodded and took off his flat cap and looked at the inside of it, and turned it around and around in his hands. I watched his fingers twisting in the green cloth. His nails were thick and yellow. His fingers were dirty with earth. A large black bird flapped over our heads and flew away in the direction where our taxi had disappeared. Mr. Ayres, he took a deep breath, and he held up the inside of his cap for me to see. There was a name sewn in the lining of the hat. The name was written in handwriting on a white cloth label. The label was yellow from sweat.
You read English? You see what that name label says?
It says Ayres, mister.
That's right. Yes, that's it. I am Ayres, and this is my hat. And this land you girls are standing on is Ayres Farm. I work this land, but I don't make the law for it. I just plough in spring and autumn, and parallel with the contours. Do you suppose that gives me the right to say if these women can stay on it, Small Albert?
The wind was the only sound for a while. Small Albert spat on the ground.
Well, Mr. Ayres, I ain't a lawyer. I'm a cow and pig man at the end of the day, ain't I?
Mr. Ayres laughed.
You ladies can stay, he said.
Then there was sobbing from behind me. It was the girl with no name. She held on to her bag of documents and she cried, and the girl with the yellow sari put her arms around her. She sang to her in a quiet voice, the way we would sing to a baby who was woken in the night by the sound of distant guns, and who must be soothed without being further excited. I do not know if you have a word for this kind of singing. Albert took the cigarette from his mouth. He pinched it out between his thumb and forefinger. He rolled it into a little ball and dropped it into the pocket of his overalls. He spat on the ground again, and he put his woolen hat back on.
What's she blubbing for?
Yvette shrugged.
Maybe the girl just ain't used to kindness.
Albert thought about this. Then he nodded slowly.
I could put him in the picker's barn, Mr. Ayres. Thanks, Albert. Yes, Take them there and get them settled in. I'll get my wife to dig out what they need."
He turned to us girls.
"We have a dormitory where our seasonal labourers sleep. It's empty at the moment. It's only needed around harvest and lambing. You can stay there a week, no longer. After that, you're not my problem."
I smiled at Mr. Ayres, but Mr. Ayres waved away my smile with his hand. Maybe this is the way you would wave away a bee before it came too close. The four of us girls, we followed Albert across the fields. We walked in a single line. Albert walked in front in his wool hat and blue overalls. He was carrying a large ball of bright orange plastic rope. Then it was Yvette in her purple A-line dress and flip-flops, then me, and I was wearing the blue jeans and the Hawaiian shirt. Behind me there was the girl with no name, and she was still weeping, and then there was the girl in the yellow sari, who was still singing to her. The cows and the sheep moved aside to watch us as we walked across their fields. You could see them thinking, "Here are some strange new creatures that small Albert is leading." He took us to a long building beside a stream. The building had low brick walls, as high as my shoulder, but it had a high metal roof that rose in an arch from the walls, so that the building was like a tunnel. The metal roof was not painted. There were no windows in the walls, but there were plastic skylights in the roof. The building stood in a dirt field where pigs and hens were scratching at the ground. When we appeared, the pigs stayed where they were and stared at us. The hens moved away with a nervous walk, looking behind them to make sure we were not following. The hens were ready to run if they needed to. They picked up each foot with a jerky movement, and when they put the foot back down, you could see the claws trembling. They moved closer to one another and made a muttering sound. The pitch of the noise rose each time one of us girls took a step closer, and it fell each time the hens put the distance back between them and us. It made me very unhappy to watch those hens. The way they moved and the noise they made, this is exactly how it was when Enkiruka and me finally left our village back home. We joined a group of women and girls, and we ran off into the jungle one morning, and we walked until it was dark, and then we lay down to sleep beside the path. We did not dare to make a fire. In the night we heard gunshots. We heard men screaming like pigs when they are waiting in the cage to have their throats cut. There was a full moon that night, and if the moon had opened its mouth and started screaming, I would not have been more terrified. Enkiruka held me tight. There were babies in our group, and some of them woke up and had to have songs sung to them before they would settle. In the morning there was a tall, evil line of smoke rising over the fields where our village was. It was black smoke, and it curled and boiled as it rose up into the blue sky. Some of the very young children in our group asked what the smoke was from, and the women smiled and told them, "It is just the smoke from a volcano, little ones. It is nothing to worry about." And I watched the way the smiles left their faces when they turned away from their children's eyes and stared back into the blue sky filling with black.
"You all right?"
Albert was staring at me. I blinked. "Yes, thank you, mister."
"Daydreaming, were you?"
"Yes, sir." Albert shook his head and laughed.
"Honestly, you young people, heads in the clouds."
He unlocked the long building and let us in. Inside there were two rows of beds, one row on each long wall. The beds were made of metal, and they were painted dark green. There were clean white mattresses on the beds, and pillows without pillowcases. The floor was concrete, painted grey, and it was shining and swept. The sunlight came down in thick stripes from the skylights. There were long loops of chain hanging down,
They stretched right up into the roof, which was the height of 5 men at the center of the building. Albert showed us how to pull on one side of each chain loop to open the skylight, and on the other side of the chain to close it. He showed us the cubicles at the end of the building where we could take a shower or use the toilet. Then he winked at us.
There you go, ladies. The accommodation ain't up to hotel standards, I'll grant you. But then show me the hotel where you can get 20 Polish girls sharing your room and the management don't even bat an eyelid. You should see some of the things our harvesters get up to after lights out. I'm telling you, I should chuck in the livestock work and make a film.
Albert was laughing, but the four of us girls, we stood there just looking back at him. I did not understand why he was talking about films. In my village, each year when the rains stopped, the men went to town and they brought back a projector and a diesel generator, and they tied a rope between 2 trees, and we watched a film on a white sheet that they hung from the rope. There was no sound with the film, only the rumble of the generator and the shrieking of the creatures in the jungle. This is how we learned about your world. The only film we had was called Top Gun, and we watched it 5 times. I remember the first time we saw it. The boys in my village were excited because they thought it was going to be a film about a gun. But it was not a film about a gun. It was a film about a man who had to travel everywhere very fast, sometimes on a motorbike and sometimes in an aeroplane that he flew himself, and sometimes upside down. We discussed this, the children in my village, and we decided 2 things. 1, that the film should really be called The Man Who Was in a Great Hurry, and 2, that the moral of the film was that he should get up earlier so that he would not have to rush to fit everything into his day. Instead of lying in bed with the woman with blonde hair that we called the stay-in-bed woman. That was the only film I had ever seen, so I did not understand when Albert said he should make a film. He did not look like he could fly an aeroplane upside down. In fact, I had noticed how Mr. Ayres did not even let him drive his blue tractor. Albert saw us girls staring back at him, and he shook his head.
"Oh, never mind," he said. "Look, there's blankets and towels and what have you in them cupboards over there. I dare say Mrs. Ayres will be down later with some food for you. I'll see you ladies around the farm, I shouldn't wonder."
The four of us girls, we stood in the centre of the building, and we watched Albert as he walked out between the 2 lines of beds. He was still laughing to himself when he walked out into the daylight. Yvette looked at the rest of us, and she tapped her finger on the side of her head.
"Never mind him. De white men's is all crazy."
She sat down on the edge of the nearest bed, and she took a dried pineapple slice out of her see-through plastic bag, and she started to chew on it. I sat down next to her, while the sorry girl took the girl with no name down the room a little way to lie down, because she was still crying. Albert had left the door open, and a few hands came in and began to look for food under the beds. The girl with no name screamed when she saw the hands coming into the building, and she pulled her knees close to her chest and held a pillow in front of her. She sat there with her wide eyes poking out over the top of the pillow and her Dunlop green flash trainers sticking out underneath it.
"Relax, darling. Dey ain't gonna hurt you. Dey is only chickens. You not see it?"
Yvette sighed.
"Here we go again, huh, lil' bug?"
"Yes. Here we go again."
"That girl in a bad way, huh?"
I looked over at the girl with no name. She was staring at Yvette and making the sign of the cross. "Yes," I said.
"Maybe this is the hardest part, now they is letting us out. In that detention center, they was always telling you do this, do that. No time to think. But now they all of a sudden gone quiet, no? Dat dangerous, me telling you. Let all de bad memory come back.
You think that is why she is crying?
Me know it, darling. We all gotta mind our heads now. Truth.
I shrugged and pulled my knees up to my chin.
What do we do now, Yvette?
No idea, darling. You ask me, this gonna be our number one problem in this country. Where me come from, we ain't got no peace, but we got 1,000 rumors. You always gotta whisper where you can go for this or that. But here, we got the opposite problem, bug. We got peace, but we ain't got no information. You know what I'm saying?
I looked Yvette in the eyes.
What is going on, Yvette? What is this trick you have done? How come they let us out of that place without papers?
Yvette sighed.
Me did a favor for one of them immigration men, all right? He make a few changes on the computer. Just put a tick in the right box, you know, and pow! Up come the names for release. You, me, and them two other girls. Them detention officers don't be asking no questions. They just see the names come up on their computer screen this morning and bam! They take you from your room and they show you the door. They don't care if your caseworker be there to pick you up or not. They too busy peeking at the titty swingers in the newspaper, truth. So here we is, free and easy.
Except we don't have papers.
Yeah, but I ain't afraid.
I am afraid.
Don't be.
Yvette squeezed my hand, and I smiled.
That's me, girl.
I looked around the room. The sorry girl and the girl with no name, they were 6 beds farther along. I leaned in close to Yvette, and I whispered to her.
Do you know anyone in this country?
Sure, darling. William Shakespeare, Lady Diana, Battle of Britain, me know them all. Learned the names for me citizenship exam. You can test me.
No, I mean, do you know where you will go if we can get out of here?
Sure, darling. I got people in London. Got the half of Jamaica living down on Coal Harbour Lane. Probably bitching on how much they vexed by all the Nigerians living next door. How about you? You got family there?
I showed her the United Kingdom driver's license from my see-through plastic bag. It was a small plastic card with Andrew O'Rourke's photo on it. Yvette held it up to look at it.
What thing is this?
It is a driving license. It has the man's address on it. I am going to visit him.
Yvette held the photo card close and stared at it.
Then she held it far from her eyes and squinted down her nose at it.
Then she looked up close again. She blinked. This is a white man, lil bug.
I know that.
Okay, okay, just checking. Just establishing whether you're blind or stupid.
I smiled, but Yvette did not.
We should stick together, darling. Why you no come to London with me? For sure we gonna find some of your people down there.
But I will not know them, Yvette. I will not know I can trust them.
What? And you trust this man?
I met him once.
Excuse me, bug, but this man don't look like your type.
I met him in my country.
What the hell was this man's business in Nigeria?
I met him on a beach.
Yvette threw her head back and slapped her thighs. Whoa, ha 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 ha! Now let me see. Andy told me you was a virgin.
I shook my head. It was not like that.
Don't tell me it wasn't like that, lil Miss Sexy Bug. You must have done something to the man, make him want to give you this valuable document.
His wife was there too, Yvette. She is a beautiful lady. She is called Sarah.
So why he give you his driver license? His wife be so beautiful, he be thinking, damn, me won't be needin' this again. Me lady so pretty, I ain't never gonna drive nowhere no more. Me just gonna sit home and stare at the wife.
I looked away.
What then? You stole this document?
No.
What then? What happened?
I cannot talk about it. It happened in another lifetime.
Maybe you've been spending too much time learning your fancy English, lil bug, 'cause that is crazy talk. You only be living one life, darling. Don't matter you don't appreciate part of it, 'cause it don't stop being part of you.
I shrugged, and I lay back on the bed, and I watched the nearest chain dangling from the roof. Every link was joined to the one before and the one after. It was too strong for a girl like me to break. The whole chain swayed back and fro, and it shone in the sun from the skylights. Like you could pull on the grown-up end, and sooner or later you could get to the child. Like pulling a bucket out of a well. Like you would never be left holding a broken end, with nothing attached to it at all. It is hard for me to think about the day I met Andrew and Sarah, Yvette. Now I cannot decide if I should go to visit them or not.
So tell me about it, bug. Me tell you if they sound good for you.
I do not want to talk about it with you, Yvette.
Yvette put her fists on her hips and made her big eyes at me. Well, get you, lil Miss Africa.
I smiled. I am sure there are parts of your life you do not like to talk about, Yvette.
Only so you no get jealous, bug. Me tell you some of de things me done in me life of ease and luxury. You be getting yourself so jealous you gonna explode. And then sorry girl over there gonna have to mop up de mess. And she looks tired enough, you ask me.
No, I am serious, Yvette. Do you talk about what happened to you to make you come to the United Kingdom?
Yvette stopped smiling. Nah, me tell people what happened to me, they ain't never gonna believe it. People think Jamaica be all sunshine and ganja and Jah Rastafari, but it ain't. You get on the wrong side of the politics, bug, they gonna make you suffer. And they gonna make your family suffer. And me don't mean suffer like no ice cream for a week. Me mean suffer. Like you wake up in your chillin's blood and suddenly your house is very, very quiet for ever and ever. Amen.
Yvette sat completely still and she looked down at her flip-flops. I put my hand on her hand. Above our heads, the chain swung to and fro, and then Yvette sighed.
But people never believe that about me country.
So what did you tell the man from the Home Office?
For me asylum interview. You wanna know what I told him?
Yes.
Yvette shrugged. I told him if he arranged to get me released from that place, he can do what he want with me.
I don't understand.
Yvette rolled her eyes. Well, thank the Lord the Home Office man was a little bit smarter than you, bug.
You never noticed the interview rooms didn't have no windows?
Me swear to you, that man's woman must have kept her legs crossed for the last 10 year, the way he took me up on me offer. And it wasn't just on the one day, mind. It took the man 4 interviews for he was certain me papers was in order. You know what I'm saying?
I stroked her hand. Oh, Yvette.
It was nothing, bug, compared to what they do to me if I be sent back to Jamaica. Nothing.
Yvette smiled at me. The tears flowed from the corners of her eyes and around the curve of her cheek. I started to wipe her tears away, and then I started crying as well, so Yvette had to wipe my tears too. It was funny, because we could not stop crying. Yvette started laughing, and then I was laughing too, and the more we laughed, the more we could not stop crying, until we made so much noise that the sorry girl hissed at us to shush so we would not disturb the woman with no name, who was making crazy talk to herself in some language.
"Oh, look at this state of us, Bug. What we gonna do with ourselves?"
"I do not know. You really think you were released because of what you did with the Home Office man?"
"Me know it, Bug. De man even told me de date."
"But he didn't give you your papers."
No papers. Him say there a limit to his power. You see what I'm saying? He be ticking one little box on de computer to tell dem officers to let us free. Him can just say, me hand slipped. But approving de asylum application, dat's a different story.
"So you're illegal now?"
Yvette nodded. "You and me both, Bug. You and me and dem other two also. All four of us getting let out 'cause of what I done for de Home Office man."
"Why all four of us, Yvette?"
"Him say it looks suspicious on him if it just be me getting let go."
"How did he choose the rest of us?"
Yvette shrugged. "Close his eyes and stick a pin in de list. I dunno."
I shook my head and looked down.
"What?" said Yvette. "You no like it, Bug? You girls should appreciate what I done for you."
"But we can't do anything without papers, Yvette, don't you see? If we had stayed, if we had gone through the proper procedure, maybe they would have released us with papers."
Bug. It don't work like that. Not for people from Jamaica, and not for people from Nigeria, neither. Get this into your head, darling. There is only one place where the proper procedure ends, and that is deportation.
She tapped the syllables out on my forehead with the palm of her hand, and then she smiled at me.
"If they deport us, we gonna be killed when we get back home, right? This way at least we got a chance, darling. You better believe it."
"But we can't work if we are illegal, Yvette. We can't earn money. We can't live."
Yvette shrugged. "You can't live if you dead, neither. You probably too smart to get that."
I sighed and I shook my head. Yvette grinned.
"That's what I like to see," she said. "A young thing like you being realistic. Now listen. You think these English people you know could help us?"
I looked down at the driver's license. "I do not know."
"But you don't know no one else, huh?"
"No."
"And what we gonna do when we get there, if I come with you?"
"I don't know. Maybe we could find work, somewhere where they do not ask us for papers."
"Easy for you. You smart, you talk nice. Plenty work for a girl like you."
"You talk nice too, Yvette."
"Me talk like a woman who swallowed a woman who talk nice. Me dumb. You not see it?"
"You are not dumb, Yvette. All of us who have got this far, all of us who have survived, how can we be dumb? Dumb could not come this far, I am telling you."
Yvette leaned in toward me and whispered. "Are you serious? You no see de way sorry girl start giggling at that taxi back there?"
"Okay, maybe sorry girl is not very clever, but she is prettier than all of us."
Yvette made her eyes big and snatched her see-through bag closer to her body. "That hurts, Bug. How dare you say she de prettiest? Me was gonna share me pineapple slice with you. But now you on your own, darling."
I giggled, and Yvette smiled and rubbed the top of my head.
Then we turned around very fast because there was a scream from the girl with no name. She was standing on her bed, and she held her bag of documents against her chest with both hands, and she started to scream again.
"Make them stop